You're listening to the EWN Podcast Network.
Welcome to Spotlight on eWomen, the place for everything eWomen Network. Entrepreneur, enterprising, enlightening, and exciting. Please welcome your eWomen host, Phyllis Smith.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight on eWomen Network. I'm Phyllis Smith. Today is a pretty serious topic. We're going to be talking about taking a look at, a deeper look into mental illness. So listen to these statistics. According to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, one in five adults in the U.S., it's about 44 million people, nearly 20% of the population, experience mental illness in a given year, in 1 year. One in 25 adults in the United States, that's about 10 million people, or 4% of the population, experience a serious mental illness in a given year that substantially interferes with or limits one or more major life activity. So these numbers are staggering, and joining me today is a woman who has experience with mental illness firsthand. She is an author, an illustrator, and philanthropist, and now she's featured on this, my eWomen Network Member Spotlight Series. I'm so honored to have her here. Please welcome Julia Sutton.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we're so happy to have you here. So you've just written your first book. This is a dream come true, I know, 20-year dream come true. And we're going to talk about that later. It's called The Other Mermaid. It's a children's book. Before we do talk about that, mental illness has been in your family, your brother, and then your son. So can you tell us first about your brother and what his diagnosis was and how it manifested in your family and your experience growing up?
Let's see, this was in the early to mid 70s, and there wasn't a lot of information about mental illness. So my brother has been diagnosed with a plethora of different illnesses, and I don't know if they ever got it right. It is schizophrenia. He has been on medication, been not on medication. Mostly he's self-medicated, and that's a huge issue with mental illness because a lot of the medications that are used for the person taking them, it feels like it's taking their soul away. It takes away who they are. So as a young person growing up, it was embarrassing. It was a secret. It was confusing because I would talk to my brother and I couldn't tell, who knows, maybe he saw something that the rest of us really didn't see and it was there. How do you know? My brother and I remain very close to this day. I love him and I support him in his own ventures. What he has done mostly has lived in outskirts areas. He doesn't really do well in deep cities. So he's lived in Alaska. Right now he's in Colorado, and that's how he's dealt with it.
Let me ask you real quick. Let me jump in here. Growing up with a brother, a sibling who had mental illness, what kind of dynamic did that create in your family, with your parents, with you, the stress? What was it like growing up in that kind of environment for you?
I think it was harder on my parents than for me because they felt guilty and they were angry. And a lot of times, if there was an explosive event, it was like my mom would throw gasoline on the fire and it just went from one bad thing to a huge bad thing. And then the police were called and then he was incarcerated. And as a young person, I was frightened and I stood back in the shadows, sad for my brother, fearing for the rest of us, not knowing what would happen. And that's what that was like. I remember the first time that we had a family therapy session and I there was a frosted glass window with crisscrossing wire. And I started tracing. I was so uncomfortable. I started tracing patterns with my eyes. And I still do that today if I'm under a lot of stress. It was a very stressful time.
It obviously it is, and it's when even when you talk about it, you can see that it still brings up some stuff for you. Yes. When very often with a sibling, if the one sibling has mental illness or any kind of illness, the other sibling kind of could get sort of left out in a certain way. Did that impact you in any way? Did, as you were growing up, in terms of even your self-esteem and your own abilities to achieve?
Without going too deeply into our family dynamics, I went the other way. I was an overachiever. I wanted to be the bright, shiny button for my parents so that they would not do to me what they did to him. And I was fairly successful in school. I was in theater. I did a lot of stuff that kept me away from the home.
Okay. So then fast forward, you have a son and you discover in his teenage years that he suffers from the same mental illness your brother did, paranoid schizophrenia. How did it manifest itself with him and how did you handle it?
And actually they're two different illnesses. My brother has schizophrenia. Shane, my son, has paranoid schizophrenia. My brother's is, I don't want to talk about Steve. His is one. My son's has a lot more to do with being terrified of being outside and hearing things and seeing things. And, you know, it was, I don't know about you guys. So many times in my life, I've felt kind of smug about something. Oh, I dodged that bullet. Oh, I'll always have good eyesight. I'll never get fat, whatever. And I thought with my brother's illness, I thought, well, I dodged that bullet. Never thinking, never dreaming that I would be carrying the gene with me. And so when my son presented with it, my brother has had so much pain in his life. And I didn't want that for my son. And so when my son first came to me and he said, I'm hearing voices. I said, no, you're not. I would take that back in a minute if I could, but I can't. It took me about a month before I was willing to do something about it. And then it became more and more evident. And there was about 3 years that we were on suicide watch. My son has terrible insomnia. And I would fall asleep at night not knowing if he would be alive when I woke up, because that was the hard time for him and I couldn't stay awake. So those were some pretty tough years.
So you suffered, and obviously he was suffering terribly.
Yeah.
What it also impacted your social life. You had friends who you lost over this.
Yeah. I want to say that I don't want to do this with pointing fingers at people. Oh, you were so bad because you didn't. It's not that. It's that there's a lot of ignorance out there on what this is and how it is. And so many people were just having buck up. You're, you know, well, you can't buck up. You don't go to somebody with cancer and say, hey, just get over it. But it's not seen like that. It's not a cast on your arm. You can't look and say, oh, I see. Oh, let me help you. It's, oh, you're a teenage boy. You're just being lazy. And then after hearing that enough, I couldn't be around those people. It's like, no, you either are helping or, but as a result, my world got smaller and smaller and smaller. And we, doctors and interventions and crisis teams and, you know, we thank God for them because they helped us get through to the next step. And Shane is no longer suicidal and hasn't been for many years, which is really, God, thank you, such a blessing.
Now you, he was on medication for a while and obviously there's all kinds of medication for people who have mental illness. And, but for your son, it helped, but the doctors took him off and he hasn't been on for about a year. Tell us why and tell us what he's accomplishing now.
Okay. So let me start by saying medications for mental illness are kind of a crapshoot. And they come up with different cocktails that may or may not work for the person, and they may work for a time, but then stop being functional. So Shane was on three different sets of medications. And this last set, and he had been on medication for about 8 years. This last set gave him heart palpitations, gave a person who is paranoid panic attacks. He gained an immense amount of weight, which really hurt his self-esteem. And he finally said, he and his psychiatrist said, let's try something different. And so under his doctor's care, he just went off because a lot of other things had changed. Our life environment had changed. Although I don't know, I'm kind of weird as a parent. I'm kind of goofy and weird, but I'm fairly patient, at least in this area. I'm fairly, not all the time, but I do try to recognize, oh, things are getting intense, back off. And when you do that and you give a little time to calm down, it really, really affects the other person. And I use this with my brother even now in our conversations over the phone because he can get very intense and then we'll just back off. And in a day or two, he's calmed down and he'll call me back. So that has a lot to do with it. So now with under my son's doctor's supervision, he has been off all psych meds for over a year. He's 22. And about 4 months ago, 5 months ago, he got his driver's license, which gives him all kinds of freedom. Because of being off of the medication, he's lost 80 pounds. It's a tremendous, the way he sees himself is so different now. And he went and took two classes at our community college, which... Three years ago, he couldn't leave his room. He couldn't leave his room. And now he's going out and he does the shopping. He's a wonderful cook. He doesn't work outside the home, but he cooks our meals. He has a group of friends he goes and plays Dungeons and Dragons with every week. It's a miracle. It's just a miracle.
So it's so interesting because what you're saying is there's kind of a nature nurture kind of thing going on, because on the one hand the meds can help, but on the other hand they didn't for your son, and it's almost like he might be growing out of the experience, because you know your brain as you develop, mm-hmm. you're there, the teenagers, they're what has the most emphasis is their emotional center, their amygdala,
right?
And so you just wonder that as they grow and the chemicals and the whatever hormones are going are you know are being released at that time, that for some people, young people, it's possible that mixture, that cocktail of, you know, hormones and brain development affects different people in different ways. And, you are working with somebody at a hospital, and you said that she has a, tell us about her, and she said a, has a quote that, that really rings true for you.
So I'm working with Ann Moore, who is an RN and the director of the Psychiatry and Behavioral Medicine Unit at Seattle Children's. And this is now my favorite quote. She says, "I believe 100% of the population has mental illness. We just have varying levels of successful coping mechanisms."
And knowing that, you have a mission, your particular personal mission. And that is your mission statement: by changing the way society looks at childhood mental illness, we will change the way these kids see themselves. So given the fact that mental illness isn't going away anytime soon, your mission, your goal, through your work, through your books, through your illustrations, whatever work you're doing, going to be doing, you're hoping that that will change the way society sees people with mental illness.
I do. I think that I along with that nature nurture is also a societal pressure for that all kids are under. Get good grades, do this, do that, be popular, wear the right clothes. And we don't all fit in a box. Nobody fits in a box. Get rid of the box. Another soapbox. In here, though, with kids that are already so stressed from mental illness, whether it's anxiety or depression, or they're cutting themselves, or it's teenage suicide. Let's talk, folks. There's an issue here. Sorry, I'm still emotional. So if we can get society to stop the stigma, stop it being a shameful secret, stop being, oh, he's crazy. Really? If we can get society to stop that and go, oh, you have a medical condition, let's help. If we can do that, then the kids themselves are going to be able to release some of that shame, some of that guilt. Oh, my poor mom, look at what she's going through because of me. And that will help them heal. Now, I don't know why. I kind of agree with you. I think that a lot of the nature nurture cocktail, if we can get more accepting and give a little extra space here, that it can have huge effects. I know that with my brother, he self-medicated. That puts a whole nother imbalance into our bloodstream, into our chemical balance. And I think that, God bless you, Steve. I love you so much. But I think that this life purpose is why all of that happened. Why was I there during that time witnessing what was going on? It helps me be a better advocate for my son, but it also helps me see a bigger picture of how do we help the world.
We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, Julia, we're going to find out about your lovely children's book you just wrote. And also, I'd love to for you to just offer some tips to our listeners who, like you, had a dream or have dreams and they are not quite sure how to take that first step. So excited to hear more about that. And we're just going to, as soon as we come back after the short break.
Have you ever asked yourself this question? Why is it so hard to make a buck? I know I have. Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. What I have discovered after going from the brink of bankruptcy to running a multi-million dollar award-winning business is this. You can't build a million-dollar dream hanging around minimum wage mindsets. My mission is 1 million women entrepreneurs generating $1 million in annual revenue. So here's what I've done. I've created the mother of all entrepreneur success programs that you can access online on your time. It's called Monetize Me Now, It's a 7-module online course that is 100% my success formula, covering mindset, mission, management, motivation, marketing, and measure. Come on, take my hand and I'll show you the way to learn to earn flowing revenue for your business. Visit monetizemenow.com for details.
Welcome back to Spotlight on eWomen. Here's your host, Phyllis Smith.
And welcome back. I'm Phyllis Smith. This is Spotlight on eWomen Network. And we've been talking with Julia Sutton. She is an amazing woman, an author, illustrator, philanthropist, and her mission is to help change the world and the way the world looks at people with mental illness. And she's just been telling us that she was raised with a brother who had mental illness, schizophrenia. Her son, who's now 22, suffered from paranoia, schizophrenia. And so now I want to launch into some brighter things for you. You just this year have released, have published your first children's book. So it's called The Other Mermaid.
Yes.
So tell us a brief summary of what the book is about and why you chose that subject.
The Other Mermaid is a funny fable. It's a takeoff on The Little Mermaid. And in this story, a prince goes to the ocean and he falls in love with what he thinks is a mermaid, but actually it's a manatee. So it just kind of goes left field from there. And I chose humor because I think the world needs more laughter. I am using the sales of this book. 20% of the sales are going to go directly to the Seattle Psychiatry and Behavioral Medicine Unit. And because of that, we're working together. In the fall, we're going to have a fundraiser. In the spring, we're going to open our own 501c3, the Mermaid Guild, underneath the hospital's foundation. And we have all kinds of plans of what to do with that. I don't remember your question.
Well, that's okay. I was just asking you about the book. You gave us a short little summary of it. Why did you actually choose to write it that way? Is there some deep thing that you wanted to uncover that in relation to mental illness?
No.
Or it's not at all? It's just
not at all.
Don't dive too deep. Just enjoy it.
So the book happened because I was in college 1,000 years ago. I was in college and I was taking a comparative children's literature class and an illustration class at the same time. And they both had unique projects, but I saw that you could put them together and just do one project. And I really liked that. And so The Other Mermaid was kind of the brainchild of that. And I did a very bare bones version of it. And I always thought I would get back to it. And because of eWomen Network, I got back to it this year. And as I was doing it, I realized that I could use this as a platform. And one thing came into another. And the time is right. The time is right for this change. And so people were magnetized to this. Oh, have you done this? What about that? Have you tried this? Can I help with that? And pretty quickly, I saw that this was a lot bigger than my story. It was everybody's story. It's your story. And everyone is affected by mental illness. And most frequently, it presents in childhood. Thus the need to keep it fun and funny, because these kids, their life is already serious. I don't need to write some book about, oh, and he had mental illness and this bad thing happened and that, and now there's this glimmer of hope at the end. They already know that their life is serious. I want to take something to them they can laugh at.
You, just a year ago, at the eWomen Network conference, you were selling essential oils. That was your business. You cool with that? But you were feeling a greater purpose as a result of the conference. Our humanitarian award winner, Mama Shu, said something. Tell us what she said and how that impacted you to light a fire under your butt and get you off and do what you feel you had a purpose, a bigger purpose.
First off, if you have never been to an eWomen Network conference, get your butt there. It changes everything. Seriously, seriously, find a way. I work at a diner to make ends meet. It was hard to come up with the money. And my life has changed forever as a result. Not just my life, but I get to impact other people's lives. I'm changing the world, and you can too. So that I have to say that. Nobody told me to say that. I have to tell you that. Now, what had happened was I was feeling quite depressed because of all of the money. And the last morning, the humanitarian award was given to Mama Shu, and Mama Shu was talking about a terrible tragedy. Her two-year-old had been killed by a hit-and-run driver, and she said it was the worst pain I could have imagined, and I knew I would die. But I woke up the next morning, and I thought, I'm alive? Well, I must be some kind of superwoman. We all have tragedies in our lives, and some are ridiculous. And I've had a few ridiculous tragedies. And I've gone through counseling. I've done this. I've done that. But there's a little part of me that always kind of hung on to it. But I heard her say that. I didn't live through all of that because I was being punished or I wasn't worthy. I lived through it because I am a superwoman. Now it makes sense. Now I understand why. And this is what gives me the power. No, that's one of the things that gives me the power. You guys give me the power. All of the people, you know, one of the best things that has happened with this is that I'm very open. And so I will talk to strangers. You're writing a book. Yes. And I'm donating it for childhood mental illness. Yes. My son has paranoid schizophrenia. And when I say that, the first reaction in their eyes is fear. The second reaction is regret. And then the third thing happens is they tell me their story. My son, my aunt, my brother, my cousin, my neighbor, my husband. We are all affected by this. It's time to stop hiding in isolation when we're all connected and we can make it so much easier for each other.
So you found a bigger purpose after you saw Mama Shu say that.
Yeah.
And then you get an email from eWomen Network and saying, hey, by the way, you signed up for this program called Conference to Conference Accountability Program. This is a pilot program. And you were, you know, you're in the inaugurating participant, I think there were 15 of them. And it was this program that helped you accomplish this goal. It's helped, sounds to me, how did it help give you clarity as to what your purpose was?
I kind of grabbed, this is my original book from college, you know, little tiny little thing. And I kind of grabbed at that like a straw. And because of the accountability piece, because of my success coach, Cindy Hendricks, because of the other women on our team, because we wanted to have a way to talk to each other, so we built a Facebook page, a private group that we could talk. All of that gave a way to stop floating out in the middle of the ocean by myself. I accomplished this goal because of because of it. I would not have even tried to do this book without it. It was a pipe dream way back there. It was a good dream, but I hadn't drawn for a long time. And my first drawings were pretty darn ugly. And this gave me not just somebody to cheer me on. It gave me the motivation because I saw other women were doing it too. Other women in a similar situation. None of us were fabulous. We were all just making ends meet. And now all of us, every one of us have achieved our goals and then some.
So what would you say to people who do have that pipe dream or have a goal and they just haven't quite done it and they're not sure how to do it and they just have to get unstuck? What would you say to them?
So the painful truth is that you have to make any change, you have to change. That's the painful truth. And I have been a member of Narcotics Anonymous for almost 23 years now. It's very similar. Nothing changes until you change it. I was a member of Mary Kay, which has a great phrase, Bidia, but I did it anyway. And that means in NA or AA, they say no matter what. Same idea, but I did it anyway, no matter what. So life throws stuff at you, and we come with our own set of fears. Like, oh, look at that drawing. Oh my gosh, it's so ugly. And then I show it to somebody and they're like, wow, that's really cool. So we're our own worst critics. And Sandra Yancey says something, done beats perfect every time. Anybody else out there a perfectionist? Yeah, well, you can perfection yourself into Never Never Land, because you just have to take a step. And if it's not the great dream that you thought it was, then you take another step and you revise it and you fix it. And you just don't stop. You just keep going no matter what. And when the tsunami comes and it knocks you off course and you've got to handle all of this stuff over here, that's okay, because you're still over here and you get back and you keep going. And it sounds very simple. It's not, it is simple. It's maybe not easy, but it's simple. And I think that part is why the conference program helped me so much. It is simple. It's not easy. But when you have other people there to help you get back on track, or to help you remember, why are you taking this next step again? I think connect with some people that are trying to do the same thing, not the same project, but improve their life, improve the world around them, make that kind of change. Connect with others that want to do the same thing, and that's how you make the change.
Beautiful. Julia, I'm so proud of you. You should really, more than anything, and I learned this when I was raising my kids too. If you say to them, oh, as a parent, I'm so proud of you, then they don't feel they've done it. So I hope you know that you understand what you've done, and that you should be really proud of yourself for taking this leap. And there's only great things ahead. In fact, I somehow am seeing a motivational speaker somewhere in your future. And I hope that comes to pass. And I do hope that the steps that you're taking can get the society to change how they view people with mental illness. I do know that you're taking those steps. Thank you for all that you're doing. Your book is called The Other Mermaid.
Yes.
And how can people buy it?
Right now they should connect with me on Facebook. You go to Facebook and type in The Other Mermaid and I'll come up, and then we can talk about that. Right now we have a soft cover version that I'll have in my hands. When I have it in my hands at the end of the month, then I'll be proud. Right now it's still kind of all theoretical. But then we're doing fundraising to raise the money to get a hardbound version printed, and that will go to print September 1st. At that point, we're going to try to get it out to, you know, Barnes & Noble and everywhere.
Wonderful. Well, best to you, and no luck. It's his work. It's work. It's not luck. I believe that things can fall in our lap, but then we got to do something about it.
I want to say something else that Sandra says that is vitally true. Success is hard. It does. It takes work, but it's nothing like the work it takes being broke.
That is true. On that note, do what you need to do.
Do it.
Find your purpose and do it right. Thank you so much.
And
we're all here cheering you on, and we'll all take we should all take our own steps in helping to eradicate the stigmas around mental illness. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to the EWN Podcast Network.